Welcome to the WWE Podcast, your place for the most passionate wrestling analysis on the web.
Just turn Roman heel. What is WWE waiting for?
When other wrestling podcasts put you to sleep, you can count on the WWE Podcast to keep you engaged and asking for more.
I've been watching wrestling for over 20 years, and that was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
This is unlike any other wrestling analysis. So without any further delay, let's get the show started right now.
Welcome to the WWE Podcast on this Tuesday, September 17th, 2019, reviewing Monday Night Raw from September 16th, last night. And overall, I enjoyed the show, of course, with some caveats. We will get to those. And it was really focused around the big ticket item of Bray Wyatt. And I think WWE is teetering on the overexposure of Bray Wyatt. I don't want WWE to do what they've done on a weekly basis like they did last night with Bray. So we're going to get to that. And don't get me wrong, I loved it, but maybe a little bit too much of a good thing. So before we get going, again, welcome to the show. I will be back again tomorrow with SmackDown Live and the review of that show. And then Thursday, Ashley Mann joins me as we discuss everything that happened this week in WWE, from Clash of Champions to Raw to SmackDown Live. So there will be no shortage of topics to discuss come Thursday, and always look forward to the co-host deal, along with the NXT podcast, which will be resuming very soon. Just keep that in mind. I'm working out the kinks with my co-host, and we, I think, are back on track to return the NXT podcast, hopefully this week. But just stay tuned and just subscribe to the feed, and you'll never, ever miss an episode. And we are available everywhere that you can think of with podcasts. So also, one last thing before I get to my thoughts on Monday Night Raw. Tomorrow, starting tomorrow, I will be doing a video stream on the Patreon feed. It'll be live, and it will be, as I record the show, I will be recording the live stream. So the way you do that, super easy to get on board. Head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and get yourself signed up. For as little as $1 a month, you can get my video feed and a lot of other features. And this is a bit of a special, though. This is technically me running a special, because I don't know how long I'm going to keep the video feed in the dollar tier, but right now, I want to make it as accessible to as many people as possible. So head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and get yourself signed up. And tomorrow I will be starting live feeds. And not only that, but you will be getting not just live feeds, but quick video recaps or random thoughts via video that won't be necessarily live, but that I will be able to record for you guys as the days and weeks progress. And that could happen as I'm at work. It could happen when I'm at home. In other words, this is where I could record these videos. Everybody has a phone that records video, and the phone's quality of video is very, very good. So I think that having that capability on the go will lend itself to, I think, being able to share with you guys in real time my thoughts on what is going on in WWE. If a news story breaks, or if a big change is made in WWE, and we all know that the news cycle of pro wrestling is crazy, then you will have access to that video immediately on Patreon.com. There is no other place that I will be posting it. It is only on Patreon that you will be getting live video feeds from every single show that I do, starting tomorrow, and videos that will occur throughout the week. I mean, it could be a couple of minute video, it could be a 4 minute video, a 30 second video, I don't know. But again, with my phone with me, I am good with being able to record that for you guys, and I think it's going to be a cool deal to be able to share my random thoughts and being able to do video is a step in the right direction. It's a step above audio. So just a bit of a heads up there. Again, head on over to patreon.com/WWE podcast and get yourself signed up, and you can get not only all video access, including live video and pre-recorded video throughout the week, but also you get every single show ad-free. Every show ad-free. So Okay, let's jump into Monday Night Raw. And got to start with the top story. And that is Bray Wyatt. The overarching theme of this show, emanating from Knoxville, Tennessee, with Bray Wyatt being featured in, I think it was four different segments. WWE needs to be very careful here. I mentioned this last night in my show for Clash of Champions, that what makes Bray Wyatt so special is he doesn't appear very much. They need to be very, very careful when using the Fiend here. And we've seen overexposure be a common theme and a common problem for every top star on the roster. Especially with the three-hour format, WWE is more than commonplace for them to being tempted into just overusing and putting stars in multiple segments. Look what they did with Seth Rollins last night. They put him into three segments. You know, you have Braun Strowman in two segments. You have guys that it's not feeling special when you see them. And while it was just one night and The Fiend was only live once, you had Bray Wyatt in his Firefly Funhouse about three other times. So I love the Firefly Funhouse. I think it's brilliant. It is the hottest thing WWE has going. And I think they know it too, based on the fact that they are opening and closing the show with it. And rightfully so. They have something very special here. They have something that is unique. It doesn't feel contrived. It's genuinely scary, even to the adult males. I mean, I can't speak for all adult males, but I'm pretty hardened when it comes to seeing wrestling characters. I've seen it all, and not a whole lot bothers me in terms of actually feeling creepy, or I'd be scared to meet this person in person. And The Fiend is bordering on that, and that's a genuine feeling that I have not felt since I was 15 years old watching Kane rip the Hell in a Cell door off of the very first Hell in a Cell match. And all of that. I mean, The Fiend feels genuine. I love it. The contacts that Bray Wyatt uses is perfect. The mask obviously makes the whole thing. It's brilliant. I'm just concerned WWE is going to use him and use him and use him and use him because he's so hot. That's going to take self-control. It's going to take discipline to not overuse Bray Wyatt and burn him out with the fans. So just a quick note there. But overall, outside of the temptation of WWE and my fear of them overutilizing and overexposing Bray Wyatt, I really enjoyed the Firefly Funhouse. I thought it was very well done, too, with the pictures on the wall with red X's in their eyes and having Bray Wyatt attack Kane. That was unexpected. He's, again, going after the legends right now outside of Finn Balor and Seth Rollins. He's been on a legend-killing, no pun intended, Randy, tour. And right now his focus is on Seth Rollins, of course, as they have a date at Hell in a Cell in 3 weeks, which I'm looking forward to. And it's going to be very interesting to hear the crowd reaction that night. Very, very interesting. I have a sneaking suspicion that Bray Wyatt may be getting the babyface reaction based on how hot he is and the fans. Look, yes, Seth Rollins overcame the Beast twice. He overcame the knee injury that he had with Brock Lesnar. He overcame Braun Strowman, the monster. So he's slaying monsters and beasts. I don't know if unicorns are next, but he has a fiend in the wings. And my concern here is not that the fans are going to cheer Bray Wyatt, or even boo Seth Rollins. I don't think they'll boo Seth. I think they just will cheer The Fiend. Is that if Seth Rollins goes through The Fiend and beats him the way that he beat Braun Strowman, even if it's with 16 finishers, I don't need The Fiend losing a match maybe for over a year. I don't want The Fiend losing, I don't want to say ever, but not in any short-term or even intermediate-term time frame. The Fiend needs to feel almost unbeatable. It needs to feel scary. It needs to feel that as if nobody can defeat The Fiend. and I don't need Seth Rollins coming in and adding Bray Wyatt to his notch on his belt of defeating all of these, you know, cool, cute nicknames of the monster and beasts, and, you know, now he's going to defeat clowns. I don't know. I don't need any cute nicknames right now that Seth can defeat. Seth has been a great champion, but Seth beat Brock Lesnar a month and a half ago. I'm concerned that that's such a short title reign after Seth climbed the mountain that maybe we don't see a finish to that match, because I don't think either man can afford to lose. This could easily be a wonky finish where it's Hell in a Cell, so you can't use disqualification or countouts, but maybe Braun Strowman interferes and he attacks Seth and attacks the Fiend. There's a lot of history there with the Wyatt family, with Braun Strowman and Bray Wyatt. So you could draw on the history there. Maybe that's how it happens. Maybe, I don't know, the Undertaker interferes. Maybe Brock Lesnar comes in and decimates both men to where they can't compete. There has to be some kind of weird finish. And maybe it is, if Seth Rollins defeats the Fiend, this is the only way that it can happen to me. In order, if the vision of WWE is to continue to have Seth Rollins as champion, the way that you beat the Fiend, if you have to have it happen, if you're not going to do a double knockout or both men can't continue so the match is over and it's a tie which goes to the champion, if you actually want the Fiend to lose, to have Seth pin him, you could have somebody interfere to cause Bray Wyatt to lose and target Wyatt. It could be Braun Strowman again. It could be Brock Lesnar going after the Fiend and putting him down and hitting him with multiple finishers, and Seth just crawls to make the cover, a la Shawn Michaels Undertaker in 97 at Bad Blood, when Kane interfered, tombstoned the Undertaker, and Shawn Michaels crawled out of a pool of his own blood to cover the Undertaker for the win. Maybe that's the way that he wins. And I'm fine with that and only that way. But if it were up to me, I would have neither man win. I know the crowd's going to call BS and chant BS on this, but to be totally honest, you have two baby faces in there. I don't care what they book Bray Wyatt as. He is a face. You have two mega baby faces in there. You have a really hot, up-and-coming, most talked about, best thing WWE's done in a while in Bray Wyatt. And then you have the elder statesman, the guy who's scratched and clawed and said pro wrestling isn't who and what he is. This is his life. This is what he breathes, is pro wrestling and being a wrestler. And the fans can relate to him. And he's pretty damn over. Not nearly to the level that they probably would like, but he's mega over. And you cannot really afford either man to lose clean to the other. So there has to be some kind of interference, wonky stuff going on. But, you know, of course, we'll get to the prediction show in a couple of weeks. But that's my feeling preliminarily on the Hell in a Cell match with Seth Rollins and Bray Wyatt. Another thread that was being woven throughout the entire show was the 24/7 championship storyline with R-Truth and Glenn Jacobs, the mayor of Knox County in Tennessee. And having Glenn Jacobs and R-Truth interact was relatively entertaining, and I'm fine with it. The absurdity of this belt is, I've thrown in the towel in terms of even trying to remotely think about the concept of this and the plausibility of the whole thing. I've turned my brain off, buried it, and it's 6 feet deep. I mean, you have to do that with the plausibility of this whole thing. And I understand it's supposed to be silly, but there's times where I feel like I'm watching a children's show that you know, it's like I have to believe in Santa Claus again to find any kind of entertainment out of this. But again, I see why people are entertained by it. I'm fine with it from the perspective of, hey, WWE needs a comedy break, and Kevin Dunn and Vince McMahon just can't help themselves, and this is right up their alley. So let's throw in some terrible comedy. And not all 24/7 segments are terrible. They're not. I think generally they're mildly entertaining. I'm watching, but sometimes I feel dumber for watching. I feel like my IQ drops a few points after watching some of these segments. But it's almost it's like a guilty pleasure that I can't stop myself. Like my brain is craving this drug, and then I feel dumb for doing it, but then I want it again. It's a weird, vicious circle. But that's what the 24/7 storylines are every single week. So Kane brings them around Knox County and brings them to the volunteers stadium the Tennessee football and ends up bringing out a faux police officer, which was really disguised as a referee. And then Kane ends up pinning R-Truth, gaining the 24/7 title. And then R-Truth is believed to be on top of Kane's limo as he drives to Monday Night Raw and pins Kane. Kane threatens to chokeslam him and says it feels good to be home on Monday Night Raw. Comes out and chokeslams the really everybody in sight that was in the ring. I mean, you're talking AJ Styles and the OC, which were completely lost on Monday Night Raw. Like, weren't even – it's as if they were just the afterthought of the show, which was a bit surprising, kind of disappointing. But Kane came out, and it was good to see Kane. I mean, you know, for a while there, I think he was damaged by corporate Kane. Did he overstay his welcome a little bit in that role? Probably. But Kane is one of my favorite characters of all time. He had so many good moments. I think he never really truly got the title run that he deserved. I know that he held the world championship a couple of times, most notably when he defeated Stone Cold Steve Austin at the 1998 King of the Ring in a First Blood match and only held it for a night. And we had Austin win it the next night. I feel Kane was a bit robbed out of the true title run that he deserved. And he was a great heel and face. And, you know, he's a topic that I could discuss at length in an entire show. So I'll pause there. But in terms of Monday Night Raw, it was great to see him come out and dish out some choke slams. It felt like old times, and only to have Bray Wyatt come out and attack the Fiend. And it was a cool moment, a great way to end Raw, great visual, and having the Fiend not attack Seth, but just kind of get up in his face as Seth sits there in, I don't want to say fear, but sits there hesitantly and cautiously as the Fiend is within inches of his face. And so it was a cool way to end Raw, a cool way to bring Kane back. And the 24/7 title is, boy, I don't know how much longer it's going to run its course. I don't think it has a long shelf life, but R-Truth may be champion for life. Okay, another thing that popped out to me was the Mike Kanellis, Maria Kanellis storyline, the whole gender reveal party that was thrown for her, and she said it's a boy. And we get Maria saying that the real father, because she's been teasing that for a few months, and then it got dropped, and now it's back. She pointed to Ricochet. Ricochet denied it. And then Mike Kanellis ends up slapping Ricochet. They have a match in the ring. Ricochet defeats him pretty soundly. And then having Maria come out there and revealing to Mike Kanellis who the real father is. And we get the returning man, the returning mustache man of Rusev, the Bulgarian mustache brute. And he's back. It looks like he's dropped some weight. The mustache is interesting. I don't know if I like it yet, but maybe it'll grow on me. No pun intended. And I think that it could be a nice reset for Rusev, having him be revealed as the father of Maria Kanellis' child. And Mike Kanellis, again, Michael Cole put it very nicely. He's a fool. He is a complete fool. And this is where things kind of go off the track for me a bit, though. It's great to see Rusev back. Don't get me wrong. It's great. He's been just MIA for months, right? Why? One out of two questions. Why is Rusev attacking Mike Kanellis? Shouldn't Mike Kanellis be attacking Rusev? And Mike Kanellis is the one who backed down. What beef would Rusev have with Mike Kanellis? Somebody explain that to me. It's a little bit backwards. Furthermore, where's Lana in all this? Does she have nothing to say that he basically cheated on her and impregnated another woman? And it's been publicized on live national television? So nobody's brought that up. They're just treading in strange water here. The payoff, after all this nonsense, was Rusev returning to be revealed as the father of her child. But it's a little bit contrived right now. It's a little bit like, are we missing something? What about Lana? What does she have to say about all this? And why does Rusev have the need to attack Mike Kanellis? Why? You're the one who's the homewrecker, and you want to attack the husband? And why is Mike Kanellis even still with her? At least he said, you know, you can have her or I give up or whatever he said at the end. I would have done that from the day that she said that you may not be the father. I would have been like, okay, peace. You know, I would have gone to the Maury show and have him say, you are not the father. I mean, that's just, what is he doing? It's weird. I love Maria. I think she has a lot to offer. And Mike Kanellis, I think, is talented too, but they're in these really, really weird storylines. Really weird. Really weird. And one little thing I would like to correct. Yes, I know that the OC had a match with the Viking Raiders and Cedric Alexander, and they beat them, but then the OC won. But for all intents and purposes, they were certainly not the focus of the show and felt like an afterthought. For those Twitter police out there, I'd just like to clarify that. Now, we do have a new King of the Ring. A King of the Ring that I believe is the second best choice WWE could have made. The first best choice would have been Drew McIntyre. A favorite, but would have made, I think, complete sense. You have Baron Corbin, a guy that the WWE Universe voted as the least wanted star to be the King of the Ring. Why do you think they did that? WWE needs strong heels, particularly on Raw. They need strong heels. Baron Corbin is a good heel. He's not great. He's good right now. And the crowd genuinely dislikes him. It's a genuine dislike. He's very easy to dislike. Look, his appearance isn't exactly likable. He just looks like a jerk. And that's not, you know, shaming anybody, okay? In this very sensitive world, you're just going to judge somebody how they look. Well, isn't that what WWE is about? WWE is about appearance. WWE is about your look, how you present yourself. Baron Corbin's very easy to dislike from the outside. Not a bad-looking dude, but he just looks like that cocky SOB, doesn't he? So that's number one. He cuts great heel promos, and he can wrestle very well. So he can perform, he can talk, and he looks the part. And that's a formula for a King of the Ring winner. So how does Baron Corbin take advantage of this, and where does he go from here? Well, this is the important part. Not so much who wins, but what do they do with this win? Does this win catapult him into the next level and be a main event contender for the Universal Championship? Or does this peter out and really do nothing for Baron other than having him go around the mid-card claiming he's King Corbin and everyone bow down to him and the usual heel shtick that goes along with being King of the Ring? It's like you play dress-up. Here's the thing. I don't need Baron Corbin playing dress-up, which is really, when you think about it, in reality, King of the Ring is nothing more than a glorified adult dress-up to pretend that you are the king of a nation and to have people bow down to you. But that also is a great platform for a heel to jump off of and pretend that they are now better than everybody else. That's the key. The key is for Corbin to use this as a platform to catapult himself and for creative to do that. They need to do the follow-up. That is the whole key to the success of this King of the Ring tournament, which admittedly the WWE has made feel very important. So now they need to actually put their money where their mouth is and have the King of the Ring winner do something with the win other than put the hold the scepter, put the cape on, put the crown on. They need more than dress up from this guy. They need something real and tangible for him to do other than sit there and play dress up. So, but overall, I'm fine with it. I think Chad Gable here is the other story. He put on just every single time this guy gets in the ring, he brings you in. He brings you in like Daniel Bryan brought us in back when he was being underutilized. Chad Gable is a player. Chad Gable can go. I don't give a damn about his height. Since when is height even a factor in the Rey Mysterio era, right? Think about that, folks. When did Rey Mysterio become champion? 2006. 13 years ago. And not one time was his height brought up. They just said he was an underdog. But not once did someone go out there and act like they're the jock of the high school locker room and pick on the little guy for how he looks. That is just, it's so sophomoric. And again, Chad Gable deserves all the credit in the world. I want to see more of Chad. He's easy to like. He's the opposite of Corbin. He doesn't look like a guy that is a total a-hole. He looks like a guy that could be your friend. He's relatable because, let's face it, he's probably closer to the size of the normal male than the rest of the stars on the roster. He can wrestle his ass off, and he brings you in emotionally to his matches. He makes his opponent look great. He is a player. He is an absolute player, and WWE needs to capitalize on the momentum. I know that he just lost this match, but he made it to the finals of King of the Ring. He's been this underdog story on SmackDown. I am ready for Chad Gable to be a player, an every week player, maybe in the Intercontinental scene or in the United States Championship scene when and if he gets drafted to Raw and he's on the same brand as AJ. And again, the draft is coming up in about a month too. So I just am singing the praises of Chad Gable. He is a guy that doesn't even need to cut a promo to bring you in his matches. So if this guy can pull his promos together and become a little bit more of a personality and not go gimmicky, okay, I don't need Chad Gable to come out to some dance music and have, you know, techno lights and come out with glow sticks. No, I don't need any of that. But I do need a little bit more from Chad in terms of, what's your personality? Where are you from? What's your history? Just give us some of the basics for a foundation. And I think sky's the limit for Chad Gable. I really believe that. This guy is a hell of a hand, as Jim Ross would say. And I am really, really high on Chad Gable. I was before, you know, when he was a tag team with Kurt Angle's son there. I think that Chad was the unsung hero of that team. So, again, I just couldn't say enough about Chad Gable. So how about that for some positive feedback? All right, moving on here to the Sasha Banks and Bayley story here and their match with Alexa and Nikki. It was a non-title match, and Sasha ends up winning here with the backstabber on Nikki, and Sasha applies the bank statement, and Nikki taps out. So I'm fine with it. Sasha needs to look strong after the just super intense, brutal battle she had with Becky Lynch the night before. And having Becky Lynch come out after the match. Now, here's where things take a turn. While I am super high on Sasha Banks, I'm high on Becky Lynch. I'm not high on her as champion so much anymore, but that's neither here nor there here. Here's a couple of issues I have. Oh, here he goes bitching again. But let's look at this. Just look at this from a logical perspective, guys. Becky Lynch and Sasha beat the holy hell out of each other in a very good, great match. Great match at Clash of Champions. Physical, brutal, clearly a setup to the move to the next level, which has been confirmed for Hell in a Cell. Speculation is now confirmed, and I'm really looking forward to that. And neither woman is showing the bruises and scars of battle. Neither one. No slings, not even so much as the athletic tape that they like to put on themselves. Nothing. Not a limp. Not a squirm. Nothing. Just business as usual. It's boss time. And suddenly, by the way, we have Corey Graves off the Charlotte train, of which he was the conductor of that train, and switches to Bayley just boom because she's a heel. But that's another story. So neither woman is showing their scars from the night before, of which it was less than 24 hours before that. Nobody, I'm sure they're sore as hell in real life, but there's nothing. This is the disconnect for me in a lot of matches. I don't need people coming out in neck braces and slings and crutches, but in battles that are that extreme, you need to have something. You need to show that what's going on here is, I don't want to say real, but it's as real as you can make it. And that's extremely unbelievable to have both women not show a single effect from the night before. Look at Sami Zayn, what he did with The Undertaker. He took one choke slam, and he's coming out with a neck brace. I loved that. Loved it. It's perfect. Not only is it perfect because it shows that choke slam really affected Sami, but heels oftentimes will exaggerate their injuries, right? That it was just a perfect, perfect, perfect scenario for Sami Zayn. So, again, I don't need extremes here, but there was just nothing, really. So that's my first critique. My second is after Becky comes out at the end of the match and has a chair, because we had Sasha who was going to threaten to beat down Nikki with a chair. As Michael Cole said, it's her calling card. You have Becky Lynch come out there with a steel chair to even the odds and take out Sasha. And I don't know whose idea this was. I really don't. I'm sure it was one of those deals that was discussed in creative and looked really good on paper. And then in execution, it just came out looking awful. Awful. Terrible. Terrible. Embarrassing eye-rolling was what happened after the match. The match? Fine. Serviceable. Understand the logic here of Sasha beating down Nikki with a chair. The chair is her calling card. And Becky comes out to save the day and even the odds with her chair of her own. It makes perfect sense. I have no gripes. Nothing to say bad about up until that point. You freeze it from there, and it's all downhill to amateur hour here. And having Becky come out and having Sasha there, first of all, I mean, I could go through a list here, and I'm debating whether I should or not, because y'all are probably thinking that's all I do is bitch. But this is the stuff that turns audiences off. Becky gets in the ring. There's step number one that should have never happened, without having Sasha immediately attack her the second she slides in the ring. Why is she giving her distance to enter the ring? That's oh, he's nitpicking. No, I'm not. It makes everyone look foolish. Why is Sasha not immediately threatening to hit Becky with a chair? She's got a chair of her own. And then you have those couple of seconds there when she slides in to immediately crack her. So there's number one. Number two, and maybe the most egregious, how awful. Awful. I don't have words. Horrific? Horrendous? Pick your word here. Did it look with Sasha and Bayley? I'm sorry, excuse me. Sasha and Becky play basically sword fight. It looked like 2 8-year-olds having a sword fight in their backyard with those plastic swords. You know, you wouldn't really try to hit them. You would just kind of, you know, they'd have a sword, you'd have a sword, and you'd go left and right and left and right. It looked like 2 8-year-olds in the backyard with plastic swords. That's what it looked like. That's the equivalent of that. They weren't even trying to hit each other. It looked like the most terribly choreographed fight scene I've ever seen. I'm serious. I am so serious about that. I'm not making nothing into something here. You cannot sit there as a wrestling fan and tell me that that engaged you and didn't take you out of the moment. It was awful. They didn't even look like they were trying to hit each other. They were sitting there just in an extremely transparent way of a choreographed fight, making sure that they, okay, I hit my right, you hit your left, you hit my right, you hit my left. Okay, now duck. It didn't look real at all. At all. It was that bad. Go back and rewatch it if you don't believe me. And if you haven't seen it, it's worth seeing if you want to see a car wreck. I'm not kidding. So they had this terribly choreographed 8-year-old sword fight. And then they try to hit each other. And my God, it was just as bad as a sword fight. It was slow motion. It's like as if the chairs weighed 90 pounds each. They didn't have any kind of speed because they were just trying to make sure they hit their spots. It was terrible. Just terrible. So Charlotte comes out to save the day. And to make matters worse, this is part four. Charlotte is coming down the ramp with no chair in hand, in basically high heels, platform shoes. I don't know what they were. And you have Bayley come up the ramp with a chair, and gets booted in the face as she puts the chair up. How is it even possible, if you have a steel chair, to have somebody who's not armed get the advantage? It's just preposterous. So that's part four. And then, of course, you have Charlotte and Becky having the stare off as Becky takes advantage and hits Sasha in the back with the chair. Again, some terrible choreographed fight scene there. And it was amateur hour to the nth degree. And I love all four women. It just was just terribly executed. It was just bad execution, bad creative. So I know I don't like to bring down these women. They're phenomenal athletes, and they were just involved in a bad segment. That's all. So whoever put this together on paper, use your brain and think about how it's going to look in execution. Okay. So all right, moving on from my. My critiques, as I like to label them, or as some of you say, my bitching, whatever it may be. But I can't not call them out for that. I can't. This is not state-run radio, as I always say. This is honest, true opinions. I have no dog in the hunt. I do not work for WWE. I'm not affiliated with them in any way. And when I see crap, I call them. Just as I praise the hell out of a lot of what they've done so far, they deserve a slap on the wrist and a spanking, so to speak, when they deserve it. All right, we had Dana Brooke versus Lacey Evans, and Lacey Evans gets the win as Dana Brooke continues her ascent into, that's right, nowhere. again, the main event of Seth Rollins and Robert Roode, so I guess that sounds more official than Bobby Roode. We have Rollins win after the stomp, and that's obviously when Ziggler broke, I'm sorry, he won via DQ because Ziggler hit the ring and interfered after Seth hit the stomp on Roode to stop him from actually beating Robert Roode. But in all intents and purposes, he did win the match. So it was a solid main event. Didn't last that long. It was, 7-8 minutes? And when you see 4 minutes left, you go, uh-oh, what's happening, right? Like, you look at the clock and you say, there's 4 minutes left. What the hell is happening? So that's always something that you keep an eye on. And look, overall, I think it was a good Monday Night Raw. And I have no qualms about Baron Corbin becoming the King of the Ring. None. Zero. Love it. He is the guy to be King of the Ring. He deserves to be King of the Ring. Of course, I think Drew McIntyre should have, but he's MIA right now as well. But Baron Corbin could really do a lot here if WWE takes this seriously and does indeed do something with this win. And hopefully Becky and Sasha and Charlotte and Bayley all learn how to swing a chair that actually looks like they're trying to hit each other and not just, again, play fighting, which is what it was. It looked like play fighting. So that was probably the biggest downer of Raw, was that just take me out of the moment, eye rolling, embarrassing. Like, it was one of those segments. I hate to get, this is the last thing I'll say about it, and then I promise I won't talk about it again. It's one of those segments that if you're with a friend and you're trying to bring them back into wrestling and, you know, maybe get them to start watching because it's somewhat cool again or whatever, it's one of those segments that you hope they don't see because they'll look at you and go, seriously, bro? This crap? Like, it's one of those segments that you'd feel embarrassed to be watching with a friend. I don't know other way to say it. It was just, I felt embarrassed. I felt embarrassed sitting at home as a fan. So, all right. Well, that's I'll end it there, and I know more about that. You guys know exactly how I feel, I think. And so we also had, I'm just reading a little bit of my review here in my notes. Alexa and Nikki cross backstage before their match. They're drinking coffee and taking turns trashing Sasha and Bayley before they went to break. And this is also something that, again, it's a critique, but it's something very easily fixable. And it's WWE's weekly sin of having people have a conversation, not looking at each other, but looking at towards the camera rather than talking to each other because they have to be facing the camera. That's just terrible production. I don't need to have them look at the camera. If you're having a conversation with someone, do you look at them or stand, like, you know, perpendicular to them? It's just things like that. Like, and it's every conversation. People are angled towards the camera rather than talking to each other, which makes it feel like a production rather than feeling like, hey, there's cameras here capturing what wrestlers are doing every week. Let's see what we can get. So it's just a weekly sin that WWE commits, and they don't even seem to give a damn. But it is a bit draining every single time you see it. So as far as Alexa and Nikki go, I will comment that I'm enjoying their team, even though they seem to be, you know, doing 50-50 booking with them. Alexa lost, I think it was last week on Raw. Nikki loses this week. And yes, Sasha Banks is absolutely being positioned at a higher level than her, and rightfully so. But as Raw Women's Raw Tag Team Champions, oh wait, no, there's not a Raw. It's just Women's Tag Team Champions. WWE just does not seem to be taking this championship seriously, as you know, they and I mentioned this last night too, they had the 24/7 championship run right through the middle of their match, and there's not a lot of airtime for them. I'm concerned that the Women's Tag Team Championship is going to fall into the abyss and go into irrelevancy after Nikki and Alexa drop it. But I could be wrong, and I hope I'm wrong. I hope I'm wrong, but the fact is that WWE does not have a whole lot of women's tag teams to challenge for this challenge for the belts, and that's just a fact. I mean, I think they need to build more teams and establish more teams as a threat, rather than just having a rotating cast of four or five teams that are out there that eventually everyone's going to get a turn with the championship, and I don't need that. I don't need that. I don't like that. I despise having everybody get a chance at a championship. I think it is devalues the championship completely. So another thing I did like, too, that's not being talked about is AOP, Authors of Pain. They had a sit-down interview that was more intriguing to me than in the couple of months that they were briefly on Raw and we didn't know anything about them. And they were with Drake Maverick. They feel legitimate. I like that they spoke in a different language and there were subtitles, and that nobody wants to face them, and they like to inflict pain. They felt intimidating. They looked like legit badasses. I like their presence. I like that they are doing this sit-down stuff. It's a great way to build anticipation for their return. AOP absolutely needed it. I don't even think about them. I forgot they were even there. Until that segment, and I loved it. I think it's again very effective to see that, and I'm looking forward to their return, and hopefully it's in a capacity that eventually gets them to the tag team championship. I think that they could be. I mean, we saw, if you guys followed NXT, you would know that they are a formidable tag team. They had a good run in NXT, that they have potential, and we just haven't seen it translate up to the main roster, but. That's not something unfamiliar either. Having wrestlers come from NXT to the main roster and not translate. So, or really having WWE find a place for them long term. It just is it's an ongoing issue. And I think this is a good time to repackage them. And I would like to see a weekly segment on having them be backstage in these sit down promos. Just for a few weeks, get us acclimated, build a foundation, and then debut them. You know, you could have, after a few weeks, maybe even debut at Hell in a Cell or interfere at Hell in a Cell. You could have, you know, saying, hey, tomorrow night on Raw or next week on Raw, AOP will be in action against whoever or will be making an appearance, whatever. But without that 3-week, 4-week build of backstage promos and anticipation, no one's going to give a damn. So I think this is a good chance for the tag team division to add depth and not be Ascension Part 2. This is a good thing for AOP, and I'm looking forward to what they can do as a team. So, overall, guys, again, I enjoyed Monday Night Raw. Certainly not without its flaws. As usual, you know, I had my critiques and rants. That's just the way it is. These aren't contrived rants or rants to pop ratings or pop numbers or to get you guys to listen to more because, oh, he's going to have a rant. I don't do that as a marketing tool. I have these moments and these passionate outbursts when I feel strongly about something that can be easily rectified and that can make, I think, the product better. Because that's ultimately what I want, what most fans want. Is a better product. There are fans out there, certainly, that are out there just to bitch. And I'm not one of those fans. I'm here to, seriously, I want to see the product better. Not that I have any influence. Maybe people from WWE listen. Maybe they don't. But the fact is, I am here because I love wrestling. I will always love wrestling, even during those terrible, outrageous, nonsensical, awful, horrific, eye-rolling, take-you-out-of-the-moment segments. But I will always be here, and I think the majority of us are. Wrestling is like a drug that once it gets in you, it's almost impossible to get it completely out. And I've talked to fans that come back even after 10, 15 years and go, I suddenly got hooked again. I had a couple on this show, and I think it's a good thing. Wrestling is just one of those genres that you always peek your head back in, particularly around WrestleMania time. For those of you that aren't true, you know, hardcore fans, as we, I guess, would label them, you always peek back in at WrestleMania. The ratings show it. And wrestling is one of those, I think, pastimes of America and really the world in some cases. Wrestling is America's pastime, I think, almost as much as maybe baseball. You can make an argument. So anyway, well, guys, thank you so much for listening. But don't forget, as I said at the beginning of the show, starting tomorrow, I will be doing a live video feed for every show that I do. And again, random video pre-recorded segments only for Patreon members. Again, this is only available for patreon.com/WWE podcast. You will not find this on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, none of that. You will only find those video segments at patreon.com/WWE podcast. So get yourself signed up. It's $1 a month and you get every single show ad free. So there's that too. And you get a shout out on the show and exclusive content, all that kind of stuff. So head on over there again for $1 a month. You can get everything that I just said. Pretty good deal. All right, guys. Well, again, tomorrow I'll be back with your SmackDown Live review. And then on Thursday, Ashley Mann joins me and the NXT podcast, hopefully this week, makes a return as the NXT Wednesday Night Wars with AEW begins in just a few weeks. NXT gets a bit of a leg up starting a couple of weeks early, but certainly heading into a very, very busy fall. So, guys, as always, thanks so much for listening. I'll talk to you next time.